Almost.
Nice. Hello. Welcome, everybody. My name's Jack, and I'm here with my wonderful and lovely friend, Daniel. Hi, Daniel.
Wonderful and lovely.
As
Hi,
always.
it's good to see you.
You too. And we're back in the dojo with our live audience. This is so fun that it's continuing. If people are listening and you're like, live audience, what's great is that you can join Daniel in the dojo that's attached to the temple, and do the Tuesday night. Is it everyday mindfulness
Yeah,
meditation?
everyday mindfulness meditation starting at 6 o'clock every single Tuesday. It's fantastic.
Great. Yeah, and then right after you can stick around and stay for
Slide
some.
right into this thing. Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Daniel, tonight we're going to be talking a little bit about the practice of contentment. We're going to dive into it a little bit later on. I'm really looking forward to this one. It's one I struggle with.
Yeah, me too. That's why I brought it up.
Ah,
Hoping maybe you could
okay.
teach me one a thing or two about it.
I don't know. I think I'm just going to be in the hole with you, which is, sometimes that's the nicest thing that someone can do is just be right there with
Yeah,
you.
we'll explore the topic together.
Yes, exactly. Well, tell me how you're doing, buddy. What's your week been like?
It's been kind of wild and chaotic, a little bit like the weather in Sacramento, but yeah, a lot of things not going according to plan. So yeah, it's been right. It's been a bit of a trip the last week, just in terms of difficulty level, like the settings set kind of high right now. But generally speaking, I think I'm managing it all right. Today I did notice actually before the meditation this evening. Super, super restless, really irritable. It was like there's a third phrase in there, which is discontent. So restless, irritable, and discontent. Yeah, so I was definitely experiencing a bit of that. And I think that so besides just sort of like the normal everyday life being like not going quite the way that I wish it would, I'm having a hell of a time getting consistency in my meditation practice. So I have a daily practice still, but it also is not going the way that I wish it were.
Well,
And so,
can I ask you? I'm curious what you mean by consistent. When
what do you mean in
you
terms of
said
what I'm
that,
aiming for or how it is?
that your meditation practice, that you haven't had consistency or it hasn't been
Yeah,
consistent.
it hasn't been consistently what I want. So
Ah, I see. Okay.
I don't
That's
mean in terms of delivering any particular outcome or goal, but more like the amount of time and regular, and not the, just not the regularity, but the amount of time that I dedicate to it is not quite as much as I wish it were. And so I find myself being sort of irritated by the fact that I can't get that stabilized.
I see. Yeah, so it's like you sit down for a meditation, but there's not much time to actually do it, and so you can't quite get into the rhythm of like, okay, here's where I'm actually practicing what I want.
Well, exactly. It's kind of that, but it's more like my optimal sort of meditation would be maybe like an hour and I don't know, maybe like 70, 80 minutes and involve some tantric practice and then some meditation and whatever. Anyway, like all of that together is like it's a good amount of time. It's just like after I do that, my sort of ideal, then I feel like really, I'm like, yeah, I got this, right? I'm a
Yeah.
good, whatever. But then now I'm like back to sort of some days I'm like, all right, I got 6 minutes. Let's go. Right. Yeah.
Which you did, right? Like you did the 6 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And for that, it's just like showing up at the gym or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I'm glad I'm doing that. Like, I get it. But there's just this other aspect to it, which I'm like frustrated.
Totally. I wonder too, like sometimes when I'm frustrated with my meditation practice like that, and exactly that, where I'm like, I'm really not doing as much as I feel like I should. I do wonder how much of that is like, just my conditioning, right? Where it's like I've been conditioned to think that like a real practice or like real engagement with something means that like I have to be totally on all the time and like my best self, right? Like there's our culture is so obsessed with like the best of, you know, that you can be as an individual.
Right.
And so sometimes I like, yeah, I just know I need to check that part of myself because I lean that way very strongly.
Well, and there's this feeling too. It's sort of like weight training, where you, like at least for me, where mentally I keep imagining like, oh, well, this is good, but if I can get more, that'll be better,
Right,
right?
bulk up,
Yeah,
basically bulk.
exactly. So I'm like, well, I'm at like an hour now, but if I could get to two or three, or if I could live my whole life just in lotus posture and meditating all the time,
Right.
right?
We're obsessed. We have a
That's what,
very obsessive culture. Yeah.
exactly. Right, right.
That's great. No, I mean, I'm glad that we're talking about this because I think it's, you know, it's what's n normalized in our culture is that, yeah, we just have to keep building and building up, like you were saying. But sometimes it's good to like let's just ride this zone that I'm in. Let me see what this is like. Because sometimes, you know, weight training, you to actually be functional, you don't have to do like, you know, 200-pound bench press. Like, right? You just need to be able to lift some stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
So I mean, this is a different, we shouldn't, you know, use the metaphor completely, right, for meditation practice, but yeah, sometimes it's like more quality over quantity, I guess, is what I'm getting to.
For sure, for sure. You know, there's definitely learning lessons in all of it. And I agree. I mean, I think that part of it is this conditioning towards like productivity, at least in my life. That was one thing. Like, if you're not being productive, you know, like in whatever your endeavors are, then you're sort of worthless, right? And I kind of like feel I bring that to my meditation practice too, where I'm like, well, if I'm not doing whatever it is that I set out to do, you know, what I think is ideal, then there's this sort of self-deprecating mindset that sets in.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. And it's always, we're always having to like kind of ride the not too tight, not too loose line because obviously we want to have discipline and diligence and, you know, do what we've committed to doing and not drop those, you know, promises. But yeah, not getting to the very tight where it's we're condemning ourselves for, you know, for not doing as much. Yeah.
Not too tight, not too loose, but my God, like the instrument just keeps getting out of tune, right?
Right. And
A little tuning peg.
it's like, but this is a whole new instrument.
Always slipping or something. I don't know, man. But no, there it's I've experienced this before, so this isn't new. You know, like I've been here before, and I know what it's like. But at the same time, there's this part of me. I'm like, ugh, I want it over. There's aversion, strong aversion to, you know. Yeah.
Well, I get it.
Yeah, I know you do. We talked about it. We talked about it before. We've all been here before, so that's where I'm at. What about you?
Cool. I'm not all too different from you right now. In life and meditation, life is also very kind of chaotic. I did get 4 days off in a row this last
Sure.
weekend. That was
Nice.
awesome. Yeah, it was really needed. But yeah, my meditation practice, I still find myself kind of like very resistant to the morning practice, where my alarm goes off and I'm just like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to get up. And so I don't. And then I sleep for another 30 minutes or whatever, 45 minutes. It's where it's at, you know. I'm trying not to be too hard on myself. I can tell that my body is very tired, like genuinely tired, from all the things. So I'm kind of just being okay with that. I
Good.
am doing my training later in the day. So that feels okay. But yeah, a little bit of the same kind of like in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, a real practitioner, blah, 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 you know? Because there is like, that's what I see is like, okay, a real lay practitioner would be getting up, you know, 2 hours before they had to leave for work and do like an hour, hour and a half long meditation session. Which maybe I'll get there, you know, like that would be great. I'm looking forward to that, but it's not where I'm at right now.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But otherwise, I started a great new Dharma book, and that seems to be kind of getting some thoughts moving around. And
oh yeah, what are you reading?
So I'm not gonna get the title right. I have it. It's over there. It's a translation or commentary on Nipam Rinpoche's meditation instructions for the middle way. And I just started it. And as of right now, he's mostly talking about the practices to develop compassion. And have you ever done the Chin Rezig sadhana?
No, I haven't.
It's really fantastic. It actually brings you through all the six realms of sentient beings and has you imagine them and their suffering and their particular forms of suffering, and then saying one mala of Om Mani Padme Hum, Chin Rezig's mantra, and just visualizing that realm, experiencing and receiving those blessings. And it's really, really awesome.
Cool.
And so, yeah, he talks about like the six realms, envisioning those, you know, beings and the type of suffering they're going through. And then also the compassion practice of starting first by imagining someone who really brings you a lot of happiness and joy. And then extending that out later on as you've kind of like really built up this feeling of compassion and not wanting that close being of yours to suffer. You then extend that out to someone kind of neutral or someone you don't know, and then to people who you even feel hatred towards. So it's really beautiful. And it reminds me a lot of the Tonglen practice. It basically, you know,
right.
That it's very similar structure. But yeah, I it's amazing. I always find that when I do that and I can really like drop into that feeling that I have towards my loved one and then gradually move it out, it really works. It really works. Like, you know, at the end of my practice, sometimes I'm thinking about Donald Trump, you know.
Yeah.
And really feeling like, yeah, gosh, that guy is suffering like big time, you know?
Yeah.
And just imagining what it would take for him not to suffer and how great that would be for all of us.
For sure.
Yeah.
Do you notice, I drawing on a little bit of experience with it, that the aspect of it that I found really helpful was when contemplating neutral parties. So I actually think that when people are charged, either positive or negative, it's relatively easy, to direct my compassion towards them, right? Including really negative. It's for whatever reason, I'm like, it's somewhat easy too. But neutral people, is not that it's not easy, but what I love about it is that there's this expansiveness, right?
Yeah.
Because there are more neutral parties than there are anybody that's positive or negative within our lived experience.
Yeah.
And it's sort of amazing because at least when I've done it, there's these random people pop up in my head, right? That are neutral in my life. I really don't pay any mind to them, like whatever, a grocery store clerk or something that I never even think about. Then all of a sudden there they are, clear and present. And I'm like, whoa, right, them too.
Right. They're in their own entire world.
Right.
They have a whole world system in their minds. You know, it's incredible. Yeah. That's a great point that like, oftentimes it's the people we don't think about that are like, yeah, they're just already gone. You know, there's no place for them. And how easy it is just to not even care.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
You know, I was thinking Recently about our discussion last week about that driver who cut you off and that experience you had of like recognizing your own self within that, you know, dynamic and how, oh yeah, it's this whole other human being. And yeah, it just struck me how I was thinking about how I tend to see other cars. I think of them as cars and not so much as people. They're cars that are like annoying me. They're getting in the way. And just to remind myself, like there's a whole life, maybe more than one life in there that is having, you know, their own experiences.
Exactly. So when you're imagining the, the Sidewinder missiles on your car going out and destroying that car, it's not just the car that you're imagining,
No,
right? Like, yeah.
right. It's all this life. Yeah.
The
And yeah,
missile thing, though,
it really
that's not. That's not un unique to me, right? Like we all think.
no, we all imagine that. Thanks for normalizing it. Yeah, it's okay. But yeah, it was kind of like a little light bulb moment where I was like, oh yeah, if that's how I'm thinking about other people, it's no wonder that I experience other people as being shitty to me, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're also thinking just the same way that these are just cars. Like there's no life around here. It's all about me. Of course, they're gonna cut me off and treat me ways that I don't want to be treated. Makes sense.
Certainly disregard you, like not think of you as being of any importance.
Right.
Not anywhere near as important as you think yourself, right?
Right. Yeah. So thanks for continuing that lesson.
Yeah, of course. My pleasure.
All right. Well, I think it might be time for some mojong. Hey,
It feels like that time.
feels like that time. You
Feels
know,
like
it's cool. Something that I've done recently is I've pulled out my lojong booklet, and I've actually put it. Uh-oh, it looks like there's a light show happening.
there is.
I'll keep talking.
Keep
So
going.
I put my Lojong booklet out on the table, and so every morning I'll just read one or a part of one, and it's been really great. It was like, oh yeah, this is such an easy little practice to do. It's just read one, think about it for 30 seconds more if there's time available, but it's wonderful.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Just a little bit of Mojong in the morning is a great way to kind of, I don't know, set you in the right direction.
Yeah,
Yeah.
sometimes kicks your butt, but in a good way.
Yeah, I find that it's kind of like we sometimes discover when we're using the random Mojong slogan generator that sometimes it's quite pertinent to whatever's happening right then in the moment and
Yeah,
whatever my current experience is.
for sure. Yeah,
All right,
well,
we'll
because
chat.
it's all Dharma.
Yeah, exactly. Here we
Yeah.
go. We're gonna hit the button.
Ready. Ooh.
We have this
Number
is a new
22.
one. I love when we get new ones.
Me too. Okay. So, number 22, you are proficient if you can practice even when distracted. Okay, cool. So, Zhang Yang Kongtrul, and I hope I got his name right, wrote, "A skilled horseman does not fall from his horse even when he is distracted. In the same way, if you are able to take adverse conditions that suddenly develop as aids to mind training, even without expressly directing your attention to do so, then you are proficient in mind training. The two bodhicittas arise clearly and effortlessly, along with everything that appears: enemies, friends, troublemakers, happiness, or suffering." And that was translated by Ken McLeod. Very cool.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. I think it's sort of like where we left off last week in the sense that the mind training doesn't ever stop, right? It's when we're living mindfully, like everything is constantly sort of subject to this mindful this mindful aspect, right? Like where we're really paying attention to what's going on. And exactly that, like all kinds of crap can come up, all kinds of unexpected things can arise. And if we don't get too thrown off by it, right? Don't go chasing it, don't get too attached to it, right? Then it ends up that it can be quite beneficial to us, and we can see, we can see some things in a different light. Like I had an experience over the weekend where, I brought up my ex-wife in a number of different contexts on the show, but I was able to see something quite beautiful and very kind, kind-hearted about her. Just it during something that where I was like, oh man, it was going through sort of a hard time myself, and just an experience where I normally might have reacted or engaged with her in maybe somewhat less than pleasant manner, right? It turned out that by sort of actively working with her, right, and not losing that mindfulness, not like recognizing that I wanted to maintain my compassionate mind towards her, that I was able to see something quite that was quite pleasant, right? Something that would otherwise have appeared as being negative turned out to be quite positive. And it sometimes surprises me how that can happen, right? If we just don't lose our seat, like hold our seat, then it can be a beautiful surprise at what we discover in other people and in life situations, right? Sometimes the life situation is unfolding in a way that we're like, oh no, it's not supposed to be like this. It's not supposed to be like this. I don't want that, right? But actually, it's turning out okay. Just stay put. Just stay on your horse.
I love that example you used, because there's like there's nothing else for me that really gets under my skin as much as like a close relationship, right? And so even though this is someone that you're no longer with, like that's still, you guys knew each other, know each other. And I would say I had an instance of that too, where I was happy with how I responded, but with my current partner recently, he neglected to do something that he had said he was going to do. And I immediately felt this sense of like, ugh, like kind of like I just wanted to like cuss, right? There was just like the like, ugh, like behind it. And I went and just actually meditated. I went and sat, did a meditation, and I thought, what would Llama do? I really did. I brought up like this, what would Llama do? And immediately it came to me that like, oh, well, of course he forgot to do that. Do you realize how busy he is and like how much he has on his plate with work and school and needing to do this physical therapy assistant test, and then it was like, oh, right. Okay. Of course. And it totally changed, the whole situation and how I responded and how he felt really seen, that I was able to be okay with something that really was like not even that important to begin with that he dropped, right? And so that was like, yeah, these moments where we can really get distracted by what our habitual tendency is, right? Which like usually for me, I'd be like, God damn it, like I'd be like kind of pissed off and thinking that it's about me, right? That like, oh, he just doesn't care. That's the habitual pattern that I get distracted with. And so but yes, that we can really counteract that, and in such a beautiful way by choosing to stay with our training and what we've learned. It really works. That's what Llama says that a lot, it really works, and it does.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be a hard practice either, right? It can be joyful and it can be playful, it can be light.
Oh yeah,
You
for
know,
sure.
I think that that's what sometimes I get that feeling though, where like I'm not necessarily a skilled horseman, right? But I'm like I'm trying to ride the darn thing, and like all kinds of, just things are happening, like whatever, like there's rocks, there's puddles, there's things going on that like I don't know like quite how to handle it. And if they come up just one at a time and only, once in a while, then it's easier, right? But sometimes it all just kind of comes at you at once, right? And then it's easy to lose sight of that, the lighthearted sort of playfulness aspect of it. It gets a little too serious.
Yep, it's okay to be clumsy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, it's okay to make mistakes and not do it the way you'd like to, for sure. Yeah. So what's this? What do you see here?
We are looking at Hevajra and Consort.
Nice. That's great. Look at how beautiful those arms are, just like spiraling out.
It's a lot of arms. Wow.
Very cool. Yeah, definitely check this out. It's on the Lion's Roar website. Each Lojong slogan is paired with an amazing art piece. So it's very cool. Well, Daniel, you
Well,
know what I'm going to ask? You suggested this topic of contentment, kind of being okay with the okay, which I imagine is something a lot of us are wishing for. But is so kind of like just out of reach. So I'm kind of curious what prompted this
Well, on
one.
the one hand, I've been inspired by hearing. I remember one time hearing Tenzin Choki say that it was how important it was to savor the okay. And it struck me hard, really hard, where I was like, right. Like, okay is really good. Okay, it's fine, right? Like, it's like, that's all right. And so on the one hand, I just like that's still like she kind of rung my bell with that. And it's still that part's still resonating. But there is this other aspect, sort of what I'm alluding to with sort of like the last week or whatever, where things not quite go in the way that I think they ought to go, right? Just in ordinary everyday life, it's no big deal. It's the kind of stuff everybody deals with on a regular basis. And noticing this sort of discontentment arising, right? Because I have expectations. I want it to be a certain way, and it is just the way it is, right? And there's that rub, there's that friction, there's that stress between the way things are and the way that I kind of expect them to be or would want them to be. And that leads to this sense of discontentment, right? And I notice it actually impacting both my practice and my regular life, where there's this certain aspect of like where I'm like, oh, I want to be able to meditate a lot, and I want to be in this peaceful state all the time, right? But then I noticed, Lama had mentioned the other day at a meeting, we had done the 7-line prayer to Guru Rinpoche, and he mentioned, that one of the qualities of Guru Rinpoche was this notion of bringing the Dharma to places where it didn't exist yet, right? So bringing it into Tibet in that particular instance. But I was reflecting on it and was like, yeah, actually, I would like to bring the Dharma to parts of my own mental continuum or to my life where I'm not really applying it yet. Which is, you should be careful what you ask for, what you wish for. Because I've been doing, there's that, it ties directly into that slogan that we just read, whereas there's this aspect of, when you're really watching your body, speech, and mind, like there's the stuff that we kind of neglect or gloss over or whatever. And sometimes, like bringing that light, that attention to it, there's a little bit of a rub to it, right?
Yeah.
And so,
It
yeah,
wants to remain kind of hidden.
exactly. It wants to remain kind of hidden. And so there's this feeling of like a little bit like, ah, dang it, I don't want it like this. Right? Yeah. And then also recognizing, so I'm going through so I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show or not, but I'm in the middle of a financial bankruptcy, right? Like personal bankruptcy, which has been really fascinating because it does a number of things where on the one hand, there's a certain sort of notion of letting go of possessions and whatnot, but there's also a lot of opportunity for reflection on like, well, how did I get here? And one of the things that I've been reflecting on that's really kind of interesting is the relationship between like desire and debt. And so there's this notion, I forget which there was a Buddhist monk that was talking about right effort, and he mentioned something that kind of struck me. He said, desire is a form of debt, where essentially what happens is you create this sort of negative space that needs to be filled. It feels very much like having a loan or an obligation. And then once you satisfy that, then it's like paid off, right?
Right.
And yeah, and it's kind of weird. Like, if you think about it, yeah, the feeling is actually quite similar. And
Right.
that, first of all, I think it's amazing how credit card companies have managed to capitalize on that, right? So you could take this debt and you can make it, you know, make it work for you, whatever, make it work for them.
Yeah.
And so what's really interesting is that, so I'm like, in the past, I've always like, it made it like there's choices that I've made with regard to money that I could make because I had this, you know, that I had this credit or whatever, right? And so, for example, hanging out with my kids, I don't have a lot of stuff. Like, that's not a thing really for me, but experiences and having a good time with my kids when we're together, that's always been really important. And so that's, you know, that's been part of it. I'm like, oh, well, maybe, yeah, sure, we can go to the roller rink, or we can go to the movies, or we can go to San Francisco and have a date, whatever, right? And so there's that kind of luxury that I've afforded myself. And I've built up these expectations in myself and in my kids that are related to this. So then now I'm like sitting there, I'm like, no, there's no credit cards, there's no money, there's no nothing, right? But I still, like, there's this sort of hard rub where I'm like, ooh. But I've built up all these expectations, and now there's like a stress or a dissatisfaction that arises at not being able to do that. And it turns out, like, this last weekend was a great example of it. I was spending a good amount of time with them, and it turned out beautiful as a result of not having that, right? Not having the needs, right? It turned out it was wonderful. We had such a great time. Spend a lot of time out in nature and just and being able to be just like honest with them and be like, no, I just don't have money for that. We don't have it, right? It turned out really great. There was nothing wrong with what was happening, right? But I couldn't help but notice how there was this, you know, like there, like we build up this, or we become accustomed to a certain way of living, a certain way of being, and how it kind of it hurts, right? Samsara sucks in that sense, right? Things are impermanent, and we have to let go, and they're not going to stick around forever. So there's that sort of
Can I ask too, was there also ever a little bit of fear in there that maybe when I don't have this available to me, like what's going to happen to my relationships with my kids or with friends, or was it ever part of it?
Yeah, I think there was a little bit. There must have been. I don't know that I'm that conscious, right, of all of it, right, of all the underlying sort of fears and emotions that run beneath all of it. I'm certain that there's some of that, but there's more just like a desire, like this want.
Like, I want it.
I want it to be a certain way, and it's not going to be that way, you know? Right. Yeah, so that's what got me reflecting on all of this.
That's really cool. And thank you too for, you know, sharing what you're going through. And then also, like, how beautiful that, you know, just being with your kids, like that's what we're looking for. That's actually what we're, you know, right. when we're having all this desire, actually, like, what we really want is connection. You know, we want to, like, and, you know, even with, like, desires and attachments like substance use or like sex, you know, all these things that have a lot of pleasure connected with them, I still think that the root of those are like this deep desire for connection. And we just don't know like what actually like a good form of connection is. And so it sounds like you guys really got to touch deep into that, this like genuine love for one another.
For sure, for sure. You know, and even it, like I mentioned, even the ex-wife got to play a role in that, right? A meaningful role that was pleasant and positive. So, you know, all of that super good stuff, right? But it got me thinking about how, okay, so we recognize that dissatisfaction is sort of the stress of life. We desire, right? We become attached to things, we grasp for things that are impermanent. We would know, like, okay, that's sort of the problem. And I was just thinking, What are practices, like what are ways that we can cultivate the sense of contentment, right? Of deep satisfaction. What can we what kind of practices can we engage in that actually like make that sort of a regular part of our life?
Yeah. Well, I know for myself, something that has been really helpful as an antidote to very strong attachment and discontentment is to really focus on the fact that I am in samsara. Like, this is like displeasure and discontent actually is the nature of the realm that I am in. And so to kind of like to put it to myself plainly like that, sometimes it'll just kind of like kick it off a little bit where I'm like, oh yeah, okay, like it's no wonder that I feel like kind of crappy right now or just like bored, you know, with my world or unsatisfied or, you know, like the ice cream wasn't as good as I wanted it to be type, you know, displeasure. And it's like, yeah, that's its nature actually. Even the best tasting ice cream, that's its nature is that it ends. And so that's kind of like cold water on the face a little bit for me, is to really reflect on the nature of samsara, on the nature of change. And the flip side too is that like the nature of change isn't just that I have to lose all the things that I like, right? But it's also that I can change, that like I can, you know, transform my mind in a positive way. So rather than being kind of pushed and pulled by all of these desires that I have that really aren't getting me anything, I can train my mind. Like I can really do this, you know? Like I saw a wonderful quote that a friend of ours posted on Facebook. I think it was Dirk. But they said, each one of us is the former life of a future Buddha. And I just thought that was so
Oh, yeah.
beautiful,
Oh, that's nice.
right? But the only way that we're gonna get there, you know, is through our effort. And so yeah, I think really reflecting on the nature of impermanence in both the aspects of the things that I really am attached to are not going to stay the way that I imagine them to be, and I can change. I can change this habitual tendency to be so wrapped up in desire. And so yeah, those are a couple that
You
really.
touched on all four of the thoughts that turn the mind,
Oh,
right?
cool, sweet.
Change, perspective,
It's starting to
perspective.
get in there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, definitely, right? So I think that's because it's sort of, we've talked a lot about that in the past about like the eight worldly concerns, right? Which is what all this desire and craving and attachment is geared towards. And then there's this like, well, what is it that brings you back to Dharma, which is actually going to reduce all of that suffering and the stress and the discontent and all of that. And that reflection on the preciousness of our human life, that's that I have this opportunity, right? Cool. That's awesome. You touched on the fact that samsara sucks. Yeah, that's the nature of this realm. That's, of course, right? It is. This is how it is. And the fact that you can do something, right? Watching karma, cause and effect, right? That you have a role to play in all of that.
Right.
And the impermanence aspect of it, right? That's
Yeah.
all of them.
The four thoughts, that is like one of the biggest antidotes that I've learned for really anything.
Yeah. I remember Lama saying one time, he said, you know, when I know when people fall out, when they stop practicing and they, you know, just they don't continue. He said it's inevitably that they haven't contemplated those four thoughts enough, right? Like
Yeah.
they've sort of like they're no longer aware of or paying in mind. And I 'cause when I get discouraged, I do actually remember that. I'm like, right, let me bring this to mind. And when I do it in the same way that you just described, it's like this, oh right, stay in the saddle.
Yeah.
There's no better place, right? I don't want to be on
Right.
foot.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yes, yeah, these tools that we can use. Yeah, excellent. What are some of yours? What brings you some contentment?
You know what is, it's kind of, it's a weird one, and not weird, but I guess it's kind of the opposite in the sense that I really like to any type of like the practice of generosity, right? So I mean, it's usually pretty easy to give away if I had money or I had material things. That's relatively easy, but my time and
Yeah.
my attention, that's really hard for me to give freely. And so doing that intentionally, noticing, for example, like, so I picked this up from a friend here in the Sangha who said that when she's feeling depressed, typically she'll pick up the phone and inquire about somebody else's well-being, you
Yeah.
know. And I've started, you know, using that, and it's amazing to me. For there's two things. It's sort of like generosity and being of service, right? Kind of in the same sense. And so I noticed that, like, I have a decent, a fair number of like Dharma jobs that I can do. And then there are a number of people in the Sangha and outside too that I can reach out to and can think about somebody other than myself. And so if I notice that that discontentment arising, that deep sort of dissatisfaction showing up, first of all, it shows up because I'm normally like, okay, I want, like, the easy way for me to recognize it is I'd like to stuff my face with some kind of sugary, fatty thing, right? Or, you know, have a beer, something like that. That's how it usually shows up, this sort of like craving. And so in those cases, I'm like, oh, right, like, this is what's happening with me. And so if I do that, if I just do some of my Dharma work, right, do some service or pick up the phone, reach out, call somebody, text somebody, it's amazing how quickly that sense of dissatisfaction goes away, and it establishes this connection with other people that's really quite beautiful. Because, like you were saying, that's oftentimes what it is that's missing, is connection. And so that does just that. It's this, and it stops the train of like self-cherishing, self-think, you know, so much consideration about just me.
And how interesting too, right? That like our self-cherishing really ends up making us do the things that will make us feel less good about ourselves, right?
A
So
trap.
that it's a trap. And so self-cherishing will, I'm the same way where like with my time, I'm just like, I don't want to give that up. But then what do? I just stay at home, do what I typically do at home, which is, we also sometimes need that. We need to be careful not to overexert ourselves. But yeah, I notice the same thing that when I volunteer my time, my effort, I end up feeling better about myself too.
Hell
That's,
yeah.
oh yeah, there's these
Yeah.
good qualities that I'm, sharing with others, and I'm able to use those in a positive way. And so that feels good. And it's like a reminder we can reflect on, oh yeah, I am developing those good qualities. I'm bringing it out. And so it's a confidence builder, I think, when we're able to kind of give back. And that level of contentment that we get from saying like, oh yeah, I did something good today. Like it feels better.
It's, well, it is the opposite. It is satisfying,
Yeah.
right? It's terribly satisfying, even if it's something kind of like, I think that one area, one of the reasons why I might not give so freely is that I oftentimes think like, well, I don't, it's not much, right? I'm not really drastically changing somebody's life. But it's amazing how much a kind, thoughtful checking in on somebody, like what that can do for your own sense of satisfaction and well-being.
Yeah.
Right, like, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant, right? The very thing that you're sitting there stressed, oh, I'm not happy with the way things are, blah blah blah, whatever. And then just a little bit of thinking about somebody else, and lo and behold, now all of a sudden you're satisfied. Like, you're good. You don't
Yeah.
need that chocolate cake. It's good.
Totally. I still don't have that level of restraint though. 'Cause sometimes I'm like, oh, I did a good thing. Time for chocolate
Well, that
cake.
too. Yeah, for
Is
sure, for sure.
the
Oh, wait, maybe the nice thing I'll do is I'll bake them a chocolate cake and I'll just
moral dessert, right? Yeah, I'll just take a slice.
Just one. You know, the other thing that I find really helpful is to differentiate between my needs and my wants. That's one thing that's been really helpful lately, is just recognizing, like, I just don't need much of anything, right? And that all of this other stuff is this wanting, is this desiring. And there's kind of cool. There's this story about the Buddha that I really enjoyed reading about, where some guy was out exercising. He's just out for like his morning walk or whatever, and he's walking along like a cow path, and it's kind of cold weather, and the Buddha is waking up, and he just has his little light robe on, and he was sleeping on some leaves on the ground next to the path, and the guy's like, "Oh, how you doing? You okay? How'd you sleep?" And the Buddha's like, "Oh, I slept great. Very easily. It was very nice, good sleep, you know." And the guy's like, "Wow, it's cold and the ground is hard, and like you don't you like man, how could you possibly sleep well like this?" And then the Buddha says, "Well, let's think about this for a little bit." He says, "Let's consider a man," and he describes this. He has a house that's well sealed, there's not even a draft. He has all these different skins and furs and stuff to keep him warm and cozy. And he has four wives, and they all, all have great, whatever. They're all very satisfying in all these different ways, right?" He goes on to describe this beautiful scene. He says, "Do you think that guy would sleep well?" And the other guy says, "Yeah, absolutely. He'd sleep really, really well. That sounds really nice." And then the Buddha says, "Well, do you think there's any chance that there's some type of like passion or desire that might keep him awake at night? Like, is there any chance that he would not be able to sleep well because of that?" And the answer is like, "Yeah, actually, I can kind of imagine that, right? Well, can you imagine him, having such strong aversion, like to something that might keep him up at night?" "Yeah, I can imagine that too." And he's like, "Well, what about delusion? Is there any kind of could that maybe keep him awake at night?" "Oh yeah, I can totally see how he might not, get rested because he has all of that." And the Buddha's like, "Yeah, I've cut that at the root, all of those. They're gone. So I sleep great." The guy who has all the nice furs and the four wives and all of that, he doesn't sleep as well as I do. Right. And it's a funny, fun little story, but I think that, even beyond that, like there's this notion that like we really just don't need very much,
Yeah, for sure. No, that was like a Buddha mic drop right there. Where it's just like, yeah, what else do you want me to say? I
Right.
sleep great. Like I've got nothing to worry about, literally. Yeah. No, and that's such a that idea of like contentment leading to ease, in our physical bodies and in our minds. It that resonates so much with me. I notice when I have a hard time sleeping, it's often because I'm just like grinding, my gears, like really ruminating
Oh, yeah.
about something that I'm trying to get done. And it might even be something, positive, like at work, right? But like on the line might be things that are part of the eight worldly concerns, like things like, well, if I don't get this done in the way that I want it to be done, then, how are people going to see me, right? Like, am I going to get the type of praise that I want, or am I going to get blamed for something? Am I going to have a good reputation, or are people going to kind of be like, ooh, I don't know, they didn't do that very well, so we don't know about that person. So, yeah, when I really reflect on it, it's like, of course, like there's so much tension that I experience in my life, in my body, in my world, because I'm thinking about how to get all these things that I think that I want, that I don't actually really need. So I love that kind of like thinking about it in terms of want versus need. And so dropping away the wants, you can say like, yeah, really, I just need a place to sleep. It can even be on the ground outside, but my body does need rest. So that's all.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is that, the way that our expectations give rise to this discontentment, and I'm not, I Sure, just lowering the expectations would help, but that's easier said than done. But I think one way that we can bring some mindfulness to it is to contemplate the what, like how realistic our expectations are, and also like the utility of those expectations, right? So that second part I think is really quite important. So on the one hand, are they realistic, right? Am I going to whatever sell my business for 10 gazillion dollars and retire early? No, that's not gonna happen, right? Maybe something else, right? Like, let's be a little bit more realistic there. But then the other aspect of it, the utility, is it going to actually lead me closer to whatever my goals are, right?
Right.
And in
Yes.
many cases, it turns out that our expectations, when we look at what we really want, right? If we truly do want to become enlightened for the benefit of all beings, for example, then is that goal, is that thing that I'm aspiring towards, that thing that I'm expecting to get, that I'm moving towards, is it helpful? Would it be
Right.
helpful
Yeah.
if I actually got the thing?
Right. Yeah, that is so attachment is our exaggeration of what we see as positive qualities in a thing that we're desiring. And so, like you were saying, even if you were able to sell your business, get a gazillion dollars and retire early, when you really think about that, would that actually make you happy, right? Even
Right.
if you got what seems like, well, of course we all want that. Like, what are the things that you're gonna get? Probably a lot of discontentment, right? Like here I'm in this like world that I don't even know what I'm doing. I've just got all this free time and it's kind of maybe a little bit lonely. I don't know. But yeah, so we exaggerate the positive qualities, thinking that this is what will make me happy, this is what will liberate me, is if I just have some free time and some money, right? But yeah, of course it's so much more complicated than that. Yeah, I've got a few of those myself. Mine is free time, like if I had all this free time, then I would be happy, then I could do my art, then I could blah 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 blah, all the things. But I know for myself, like if I have too much free time, that's when my mental health
Oh,
really
yeah.
starts to decline. So really being content with, I don't have that right now. Can I be content that like I actually have a very full schedule, that's actually full with things that are really meaningful to me? Like, can I be content that I have this precious human life where I have all of these opportunities all day, to practice the Dharma? Then it doesn't even matter if I have free time or not. I'm coming back to Lama, right? What would Lama do? What does Lama do is he has this incredible schedule, right? Where he's seeing people all day in a therapy context, in a Dharma context, and even on the weekends, right? And so it's like this incredible being, who's doing all of this, and that's contentment, right? Is like someone who can be so full and completely engaged in what they're doing, and not thinking about all these little desires, that is like the awakened, enlightened experience.
Right. And if it's true, if our limited experience in serving others and its relationship to satisfaction is any indicator, right? Like, in fact, by serving other people, we are become deeply satisfied. We don't need as much, right? Then that type of enlightened activity, if you will, is going to be deeply satisfying, right? Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna, though, for your birthday or something, I'm gonna get you a bumper sticker. WWLD.
Totally. I was thinking I needed a little bracelet, right? Because when I was a kid, we had those like rubber band bracelets, WWJD.
Exactly.
Nice. Well, I was thinking too, how important it is, like when we're experiencing that feeling of discontentment and displeasure, And when we can really reflect on that being the nature of samsara, like instead of just staying in that kind of like, ah, oh, everything sucks, like nothing's great, nothing's pleasurable, to really like, if we can leverage that moment towards like bodhicitta, right? So all this feeling of like, wow, like this suffering, this sucks. I'm just so like uncomfortable all the time. If we can really turn that out and say, oh my gosh, wow, every single other being is feeling the same way. Oh my God, like that's terrible. Like, but also I love them. So let's do something about this, Like I think that can be a really important moment to turn away from that discontentment of like the self to like the bodhicitta of like, okay, we're all together. Let's
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that that can be underestimated. I that aspect of practice where we consider our, like when we feel some negative, whatever it is, let's just say it's stress in this case or discontentment, and then recognizing, right, actually this is the situation for all of us, right? And like, wow, that this there isn't anyone that is escaping this,
It's
whether
shocking, right?
what's
Like
that?
it's like shocking.
That's right. It literally feels like waking up when you have, when you realize it. You take that moment and you realize it. It's sort of like that cloudiness of me, this tight little constrained self, whatever, dissipates. And all of a sudden, it's just this like, oh, wow. Like it's shocking in that sense. I couldn't agree more. I underestimated it in the beginning. I thought, well, that's just like a neat little thing, like whatever, like a little trick. But no, actually, it's quite powerful.
And the little self is so constantly victimizing itself and so like demoralized all the time, right? And so like that's gonna be a really discontented place. But man, when we can turn it around, there's really a lot of love that can happen in that reflection about, no, this is all of us.
That's right. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. That's it. That's the practice
That's
with.
it. That's the practice. We're done. Just no, I got a lot of work to do, that's for sure.
Well, I like that, like the Tonglin practice or metta practice or maybe the Chenrezig practice that you mentioned earlier. Like they accomplish the same type of goal. They help us to recognize that it isn't about this one tiny little limited being here, right? Like, that's such a small scope,
It is such a
right?
small scope. Yeah,
It's so
absolutely.
much more expand. We can expand, right? Way, way beyond that. And that expansiveness, it feels good. It's not this, that's never not contented.
Absolutely. Oh man, Daniel, this has been really lovely.
Jack, I feel so much better already.
Me too.
Yeah,
You've
I'm
been a
deeply satisfied.
That's right. Well, friends in the dojo, friends online, we appreciate you so much. If you're able, please make a donation. Keep Lions Roar Dharma Center lights on. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye, Jack.
Hi,
Take
Daniel.
care.
Thank you.